This is the Lombardi Line with Michael Lombardi and Patrick Maher on VSiN.
Welcome back in. It is hour number two on the Lombardi Line, presented by BetMGM with Michael Lombardi. I'm Ben Wilson in for Patrick. Patrick back tomorrow on the show. We have the update to Michael after a post-game practice press conference from Sean McDermott in Buffalo. His exact quote today on the injured quarterback Josh Allen. He's day-to-day. The next question is going to be, will he play? We'll see. Betting market's not convinced of that. Money keeps coming towards Minnesota. We're at either 3.5 on the Bills or 4. That's what Sean McDermott had to say, and I know you're not optimistic that Allen will be giving it a go this week either there with that elbow sprain.
Yeah, and I think, you know, just looking at my board as we start the second hour of the show, you know, Carolina is going to go down to 2.5, it looks like. There seems to be some movement. There's 115 here in DraftKings. They're already at 2.5, DraftKings at 115. So there's some shops there. If you like Atlanta, you know, that number's coming back towards you. If you like Carolina, it's getting away from you. And then I think the Seattle's going to 2.5 now. I think Seattle will close at 2 before this is all said and done. I don't know what to make of the Buffalo. We're all day to day, you and I. I see 3.5s and 4 straight across the board here for me now. I don't know what board you're looking at. I'm surprised the Raider line hasn't moved, because the Raiders, the Patriots were favored by 6 against the Colts last week. I knew the Colts would lose, but I thought 6 was too much based on how the Patriots played offensively. Then I watched the game. I don't know if the Patriots could have played any worse offensively. I mean, they were averaged 3.3 a play, only to be defeated by a team that averaged 2.0 a play. So, you know, maybe 6 is the right number. I don't know. I'm fascinated that there hasn't been movement in that line.
Right. Well, and it also goes back to when you talk about how you make your own lines for every single game. How do you make a line with Raiders Colts and factor in the coaching issues going at play there for Indy? How much did that factor into the line you made?
Well, I mean, it factors. It's how you start the game. I mean, Indy's now. So I give out grades for coaching staffs. I give out grades for quarterbacks. And that is no different than that grade that you would get for how many punts per play you have, right? So it's all in the equation, and it changes every week. I mean, let's say this. Seattle's grade this week one at quarterback is way different than Seattle's grade this week at quarterback, right? One week it was 32. This week it's 7 or 5. You know, I mean, it's because of the way he's playing. So let's just put the Colts are the bottom coach team in the league with the worst quarterback. That's the starting point.
And from there, you now get Raiders by 6. As you point out, not a lot of movement on this game. There's been a lot of movement elsewhere, including not only on the lines for Week 10, but also the futures market as well. We've seen a flip now. Patrick Mahomes is the new MVP. Pass at least a favorite right now, passing Josh Allen. Jalen Hurts has also passed Josh Allen up to 2nd now. And Lamar Jackson still holding firm, Michael, at 4th. After a pretty impressive performance Monday night for Baltimore, and it's now the Ravens getting a little action too in the AFC futures market. They're now the 3rd favorite behind only the Bills and Chiefs here. Had to like what you saw Monday night in a pretty dominant, convincing win for Baltimore.
Yeah, I mean, I thought they played really well, and I thought I was disappointed in how I thought New Orleans would have played much better last week. They didn't. You know, they proved me wrong. I mean, get a home dog in New Orleans, especially after they played well the week before. You know, and they dominated the Raiders with some time off. And look, they got dominated. The game, you know, when they punted the ball back and it got 14-0, you could just sense that game was over, right? I mean, you knew that was going to happen. And so I felt like, and the Raiders looked better on the Ravens looked much better on defense. And when New Orleans can't run the football, you know, they averaged 3.2 a carry. They couldn't get anything going, and the ball's going to be in Andy Dalton's hands way too much. You've got problems. And I think Lamar did what we've all said. I mean, they're running the 6-back attack. He had a long run of 17 in the game. You know, he only has 10 incompletions. He's not trying to force the ball down the field. And, you know, likely was the tight end that, you know, I mean, he catches the first touchdown pass there. So, you know, even without Mark Andrews, you know, he was going to try to throw the ball to Likely. He had one catch for the game. I thought he would get more, but, you know, they didn't need it because they were able to run the ball against the Saint run defense that I thought would play better.
Look, my two contest losses this past week, Micah, were the Colts and the Saints. And did I look idiotic on both of those losses? I was with you. Certainly liked the spot for the Saints. Big reason why the Saints were a bet that got a lot of support in the market was you had a number one rush defense taking on a Baltimore team that the perception is pretty one-dimensional. But we now find ourselves asking, who is this Saints team? 3-6.
Yeah.
You were the number one rush defense, but you give up three different 11-plus play scoring drives. You allow nine different third down conversions. Who are you right now at the midseason point?
It's 60% on third down, you know, and they only got one third down by penalty. I mean, think about this, and I always keep track of this. The Saints had 13 first downs total for the game, and two of them came by penalty by the Ravens. So, you know, I mean, so I think to me it's really challenging. And so, you know, the Saints are just – They're all over the place. And it's not because they didn't have Michael Thomas. And, you know, everybody says, well, they don't have Jarvis Landry. Jarvis Landry isn't going to tilt the field. He's too slow. You know, to me, it's their offensive line got beat up. And I thought we saw Baltimore's defensive front really play well. And I think that was the difference in the game.
New Orleans now has to go on the road to a team coming off the bye. And you figure, is it even a possibility to trust them laying points on the road? Laying 2.5 right now in the market. T.J. Watt is rumored to be potentially on track to return this week for Pittsburgh. That has not been confirmed yet. What we do know is the Steelers have a new kicker this week. They had to sign Matthew Wright off of Kansas City's practice squad. Chris Boswell still dealing with a groin injury, and that could be very significant as we get towards November. We know kicking at Heinz Field, Acrisure Stadium, it's not easy when it starts to get cold. So that could be one angle you look at for this week on an already very low total, Michael, of 40.5.
Yeah, I mean, you would think Dennis Allen would give Kenny Pickett a lot of troubles with his pressure package, right? You would think that, okay? I think that, to me, this sets up for New Orleans with all their blitzes, and if they can, Najee Harris can't run the ball, their offensive line is bad. You know, Mike Tomlin does have a week to get ready for the game. Maybe that makes a difference. But once again, getting week for the game, they can't practice. They have to have 4 days off, so it's impossible. So, I mean, to me, on this is one of those where initially, you know, Monday when you look at the sheets, the first thing you write down is, I wrote Saints down Monday. That was before they played Monday night. I'm like, how are they only a 2.5-point dog to a favorite to but Pittsburgh? I mean, and then when I ran my numbers this week and I looked at it, I'm like, okay, now I see why, because my numbers for the game I had Pittsburgh at 2.93. I mean, I had the Saints as a 2.93 favorite.
So pretty much right on the number where it's at. And as you talk about, I mean, you're looking at spots where you make the number, and it's several points off from what the betting market number is. You feel like there's an edge there. But it goes to the entire state of this NFC South, where New Orleans, they drop back from 4-1, now 5-1 to win the division, a game back of a 4-5 duo of Falcon and Tampa Bay Bucks teams at this point. Tampa has moved to near $2 favorites to win the division. We've seen how the Falcons have looked very unconvincing over the past couple of weeks, getting blown out in Cincinnati, fortunate win in overtime against the Panthers, and then had a back-and-forth coin flip game where they barely hung on originally. Chargers end up coming back, beating them by three. If you're still looking at this objectively long-term, is there a path where 1-5 tries the Saints somehow figure it out, win the division, or are you just at the point where you're staying away from this division entirely?
It's so hard to handicap. I mean, both teams that are playing tomorrow night got blown out by Cincinnati, right? Both teams did. Obviously, they weren't prepared to play. You know, I thought Carolina was making some progress, but defensively, they get so disappointing to me at times. When I think that when you can count on them, you can't count on them. The thing I got mad at myself last week, I recommended New Orleans last week, and I always have a rule, and I violated it, and I didn't think of it, is when teams are going to a bye, like Miami has a bye next week, usually those teams play really well. New England had a bye last week. When you're going into a bye and you're playing home, I think there's a great motivation by the players to really play their best. I really do. You know, and I mean, that line in Cleveland, Miami is coming the other way now. Right? I mean, it opened up at 4. I think it's at 3.5 now, right?
Yep.
So I think Miami could be a strong play because I do think that bye, they're going to go in the bye. Seattle and Tampa have byes coming back from Munich.
Right.
I'm not going to count them. Jacksonville has a bye coming back from Denver, coming back from
Kansas City.
You know, we know Kansas City doesn't cover very well. I don't trust Jacksonville, even though they won. But plus Kansas City played a doubleheader last week. Offensively, I think Kansas City was embarrassed by what they did offensively. So, you know, I would never think they're going to upset them, take the points different, but I think Miami's in pretty good shape.
It's a very good, I think, pro tip of the hour here at VSiN, of which we give you one every single hour that you're talking about, Michael, looking at teams who have their bye weeks the following week. And you look at the, traditionally, those teams generally perform, especially if they're at home. Home teams with a bye week the following week generally look pretty sharp and ready to go in those particular spots. We told you last hour, our tip of hour number one, looking at just looking at recent form, right? So if you're combining recent form with teams heading into bye weeks, and you look at Miami and Cleveland, for example, outside of the Monday night game we saw, and Cleveland plays their best game of the year against Cincinnati, then goes into a bye. Miami, say what you want about the defense, but offense has been clicking on all cylinders. Bye week next week for the Dolphins, home game. Is this a spot where you're looking to go against the market that has had a ton of money come in on the Browns these last 2 days?
Yeah, I would go against the market here because I think that the Browns still, what's the weakness of the Browns? They have trouble covering. If they can block Myles Garrett, Tua should have a good day. I mean, you know, now I don't trust the coach for going for it on fourth down and some of the horrible decisions he makes, but you know, I think that number is coming down. Let me see here. I got it. It's at 3.5 now. A lot of shops at 3.5. There's some fours, but I think it's going to end up at 3.5. I hate giving up that hook. There's no doubt about that.
It was and at 5.5, too, at open. But second straight week, this will be the market going against Miami. We saw all that money to the Bears. We can maybe have that discussion up next, Michael, because the Bears, it looks like they're, whatever you want to say about Justin Fields, they're starting to turn the corner.
I got lots to say about Justin Fields. He's not a quarterback. I mean, that's not hard to say. I mean, he's a running back.
I listened to you and Femi on the GM shuffle. I know your point has been well documented on Justin Fields. We'll figure out also what to make of that Bears-Lions line this week. A lot of toggling back and forth in the market. A lot of interesting underdogs getting some movement in their direction. We'll break those situations down next here on the Lombardi Line.
Listening to the Lombardi Line on VSiN, featuring former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now, once again, here's Patrick Maher.
College basketball started, and now is the time to get your copy of our annual betting guide at over 400 pages. It's our biggest betting guide ever, with odds, trends, power ratings, and analysis on every team. And our team of experts, including Greg Hoops-Peterson and Matt Eumanns, provide their predictions for win totals, futures, conference champions, tournament teams, and breakdown of all 60 coaching changes since last season. The only way to get the guide is to become a VSiN Pro subscriber. Sign up now for just $99 and get VSiN Pro access to everything we do all the way through the Super Bowl. Sign up today at VSiN.com/subscribe. Back with Michael. I'm Ben here on a Wednesday. Big thanks to our producer, Matt Santos, behind the glass at downtown Las Vegas, our Circus Sportsbook studios. Michael, the theme really of Week 10 has been a lot of underdogs getting support in the betting market. And this game we'll talk about right now, Lions and Bears, it's been a little more of the two-way variety where the Bears got some early money when this opened at 2.5. But as soon as it got up to 3, we have had that support coming back the other way for Detroit. Just the second time all year, Chicago has been a favorite. Last time was against the Houston Texans when they were laying a similar number. Lions' best defensive output of the season. Bears' offense has somehow now found something over the past few weeks with Luke Getsy, the offensive coordinator. What do you make of the matchup here?
Well, I think they got it. You know, this they found out who they are, right? So they need to run the ball. I mean, they ran it, what, 40 times? They know Justin Fields isn't a drop-back passer. They know Justin Fields has got to run the six-back offense. And so I think ultimately that's what they're doing, and they're doing a good job with it. They've always tried to run the ball, but they've tried to be a West Coast offense, and now they've said, you know what, let's just go and run the six-back attack. I think the interesting thing about this game is the last five is how bad Detroit has been, not the same offensively as they were earlier in the season. You know, they're still fourth points per play, but their fourth quarter rating's horrible. Their points per play defense is horrible. Their last five games is horrible. You know, their points per play over the last 5 weeks is 25th. So they haven't really, as you know, you look at all the numbers, they haven't been very good. So this game kind of favors Chicago, who's not very good defensively either now. I mean, this is two bad defenses going against one another. I think the speed of Fields, I think when you play this six-back attack, you've got to look at, and you're betting, when you're handicapping the game, you've got to look at the defensive front of the team they're playing. The Lions are not fast up front. They don't have a fast middle linebacker. They don't have fast defensive linemen. What we saw from Baltimore was how fast they played, you know, with Queen and Roquan and their defensive front to be able to slow down the six-back attack. I think it's going to be a real problem for Detroit to slow down Chicago. Now, can Chicago slow down Detroit? I think so, especially considering that, you know, Mr. Goff has got to play outdoors, and it doesn't sound like it's going to be perfect weather up there either.
As good as it was, maybe surprisingly so, last week, good weather at Soldier Field in Chicago. We'll get the updated forecast on that in a second, but you would not expect the conditions to be
33
great.
Degrees and cold, and 10-mile-an-hour winds. I think it's an easy play for the Bears right here. I think you play the Bears and you just say, okay, if I lose to Goff in 33-degree weather, which I don't have it. I used to keep track of it when he was at, but anytime he's been under 40 degrees, it's been a disaster.
I know we did this a few weeks ago when Goff went to New England and he was averaging barely 200 yards per game in outdoor conditions. Record was not very good, and it was basically a little bit inflated by a early season game in Chicago. I think it was week two or week three, his first year as the Lions starter. Numbers have not been good for Goff outdoors as a result. And you wonder, though, for the Bears, if you're thinking about the matchup against Detroit's defense, 24th in run stop win rate that ESPN puts together, 28th against the run, thinking, as you talk about, Michael, this should be a very good matchup for the Bears and Justin Fields. The question, though, long term is, can this new strategy that Luke Getsy and the Bears have gone to and figured out as a strength, how sustainable is that as defenses eventually, the good defenses, not Detroit, start to make adjustments and try to counteract some of those things the Bears are doing?
I think there's not enough good defenses to really handle it, right? I don't think people have a rhythm of it or how to deal with it. You've got to have a certain kind of team to deal with it. And it's not much scheme. It's about their talent. I mean, nobody's going to out-scheme Belichick, but he didn't have enough fast guys to really handle it. That's a concern. You know, and so if you're not fast on defense, if you don't have a fast middle linebacker and you don't have fast defensive ends like the Jets do or like San Francisco does, then it becomes a real problem for you. And then when you're playing it on the grass, you know, you think it slows the game down, but it slows the defense down too. I think it's going to be a real challenge for the Lions. I really do. Now, look, I know the Bears are not good on defense, but this is a game I think it favors the Bears weather-wise. And going against their opponent. I mean, the Lions, to me, can they handle success? You know, they got that win last week. And can they play well outdoors? You know, I have my doubts about that.
And we've seen the market, too, just explode to the over here. It's 45.5 at open, seeing 48.5 now. I was among the many, I'm sure, Michael, who had in-game overs in that Packers-Lions game. Seeing the movement and the ball movement for Green Bay, I think I took over 41.5 in that game. And you're just sitting there pulling your hair out with all the red zone interceptions by Green Bay. It's like, did Detroit really do anything? I mean, they took advantage of wouldn't you say that was the worst Aaron Rodgers start of his career? I certainly felt like it was, looking back at all the numbers.
I thought it was, it was a bad Packer offense. I didn't understand what the Packers were trying to do offensively. I mean, the week before they ran the ball effectively, you know, that was the saving grace in Buffalo. They were actually got their running game going. And in this game, they come in and they're not trying to run the ball, you know, and some of the decision-making, the third down, the fourth down call, you know, that gets tipped, the pass to the tight end, I mean, is ridiculous. Let's go back to Chicago here for a second. I mean, there's 84% of the tickets have been written up on the Bears, right? They're nobody's betting the Lions. 91% of the money is all on the Bears. That always scares you.
I know. I'm with you. I'm with you on that as well. It's always no, and that's the thing. I mean, that was the one concern I think a lot of us in the market had on Seattle last week. Very popular team as well, but you know, sometimes those teams do end up getting the job done and covering. Bears looking to get that job done.
Well, I mean, go the other way. I mean, we were talking off air. I mean, we sit there and talk about this quote unquote sharp plays. Last week it was the Raiders. Last week it was, you know, I mean, there all these other sharp
Raiders,
none of them,
Saints,
I mean,
yeah, those were the two big
Saints.
Ones
I mean,
week.
None of them are like that. They're nothing sharp. Everybody's looking at the same data. Like sometimes we use this term sharp, like there's a crystal ball. Like it's everybody's analyzing the game in different ways. And I think ultimately logic has to prevail, you know, and I always, to me, the only thing that I look at those money splits, which everyone should, is because I know those casinos and those sports books don't lose money. And typically the public does. So you right. always don't want to be on the side of the public. I'm not saying I want to be on the side of the sharps. I don't want to be on the side of the public in terms of all that.
It's a very good thing to just have in the back of your mind going into all these weeks, just not using it blindly to bet, but just understanding where the action is coming in and out of. not that that should really dictate the actual bets that you make. Another good example this week is we're looking at some big movers, especially two underdogs this week. Houston Texans getting a lot of support off of a Thursday night performance where they have now the extra couple of days. Yet, usually, you have the big edge for these Thursday night teams, Michael, coming off with the extra couple of days. But Texans have that negated by the Giants coming off of their bye. We at last saw the Giants losing that game on the road to Seattle. So this opened 7. We're down to, we'll update our screen here in a second, because this, as I look at the updated screen, 4.5 now. And it's not really any huge significant injuries here on the Giants. What do you think people are seeing in the Texans this week?
I think Seattle, I think Minnesota to a degree is, I think there's a false sense that they're all carrying a ticking bomb, that everybody's scared to bet them because they know they're not very good and the bomb's going to go off, right? You know, it's like, is it this going to be the week where they play bad? Like, we know they're bad. Like, they're not very – it's like Tennessee. We know they're not bad. I was talking to a player in the league yesterday, you know, and they were talking about Vrabel and the amazing job he's done. And the guy volunteered, you know, they're not any good over there. They're terrible on offense. They have no receiver. And he went through the whole list of it like I was giving it, you know. And so it's the truth. It's the truth. I mean, it's like you – and so every time you want to play – like Tennessee – you know, I want to play them against Denver. That's 3 points. But is this the week where Tennessee plays as bad as their talent is? I don't know. I think that's a lot with the Giants. Because in this game, when I visualize this game in my head, Davis Mills is going to have a hard time, along with Pep Hamilton, handling the pressure. They're going to get blitzed. And they're going to turn the ball over. Now, the Giants might not be able to run the ball as well. They pretty much can. I mean, Houston might be able to run the ball against the Giants. But when the game's on the line and it's third down, where are the Texans going to make plays against pressure? Now, I'm sure they'll get healthier at receiver. They'll get all their guys back. Maybe Brandon Cooks will even play. But I don't know how they do that. And as the game goes on all year, Houston has always fallen apart in the fourth quarter. They're one of the worst fourth quarter teams in football.
Seemingly the big move, as you talked about Brandon Cooks, he is expected to be a full participant in practice this week. They expect to have him back. Same deal with Nico Collins. So you would assume, again, the couple extra days off of Thursday night. Teams have been good coming off of Thursday night, 8-2 against the number over the past 5 weeks this season. Again, though, this is the first time we've seen that negated, that rest edge by the bye week of the Giants. And to me, you have a Texan run defense that's 28th in the league, a Giant rush offense that, as we know, has been very effective with Saquon Barkley and Daniel Jones. That is the big question mark. If you're looking to back Houston in this spot, how do you get past that in this specific matchup? So Texans and Giants, another interesting matchup. We'll talk Thursday Night Football to back end our show. But up next, Harry Gagnon, the H-Dog from the Against All Odds podcast. He has plays ready to fire on the Week 10 NFL card. We'll discuss next.
You're listening to The Lombardi Line on VSiN, featuring former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now, once again, here's Patrick Maher.
Hey, speaking of Michael Lombardi, he's got a column right now at VSiN.com on the Colts coaching situation. We also have Josh Applebaum targeting the main games in the NFL Week 10 card that wise guys are looking at right now. There are 6 of them. And then in the VSiN newsletter for our pro subscribers, California voters, they rejected both propositions that would have legalized sports betting in the state of California. So not great developments there after what we saw last night on election night. Now, as we welcome you back, though, and Patrick Maher, who is in California. I know Michael's certainly disappointed with that. Patrick will be back on the show tomorrow. I wonder if Harry Gagnon, who joins us, Harry bets everything. And we always talk NFL betting with Harry. I feel like the election betting is now a thing, apparently. It's nothing I've ever gotten into, but Harry seems like the perfect guy who probably has been betting election stuff, Harry. I don't know if that's true at all, but Harry, you bet on everything. You seem like the type of guy who would be finding edges in the betting markets on this stuff.
You would think that maybe I would. I haven't dabbled there. Sal was all over it this past election. Sal had bets on that all over the place, but you know, Listen, I didn't think it was going to pass in California, guys, but a little disappointing with the outcome of being 80% no. Makes it a little disappointing, a lot disappointing, actually. And moving forward to next year, maybe doesn't look like, I don't know if you can swing that so quickly in a year. And, you know, it's kind of rough.
I would say pretty shocking that it was yes. Not only did it not pass, but that vehemently against 80% to the no there on that Prop 27 in California. Harry, good week for you on the straight bets last week. Who would have thought Bills would be the team to kill your money line parlay? Just a crazy turn of events now for a Bills team that all of a sudden might be without its quarterback for this upcoming week.
Yeah, well, you can't trust the Bills now. I mean, what's going on? I don't know who you can trust, but that was a beautiful call. I think last week, Michael, you loved the Titans too. I loved the way they played their game. They gave them a little cushion there with those 9 points right off the bat after Tennessee got that first field goal. But you know what? I think Kansas City got that first field goal, punched it up to 9. Then Tennessee's defense bent, but it didn't break, and that was a nice pick with the +14. That was way too many.
Yeah, although, you know, I thought with Tannehill, I thought it was going to be. And then when Willis came in, I think, how can they score? You know, how can they score? And, you know, and for Vrabel to be able to do what he did in that game is just remarkable, when he got no help at all from his offense. I mean, they had 2 drives in the game. That was it.
Yeah, that was it. And then, like I said, they held Kansas City to a couple field goal tries, and they missed 1-2, which was nice for them. They kept them in the game, and they covered pretty easily.
5 forward completed football passes for Malik Willis last week. Titans, though, get the cash. And you think about your other win there, Harry. It was Dolphins-Bears. You identified a very weak Bears defense and an improving Bear offense. That game was not even a sweat, over 45.5. Are you going back to the well this week with that same thought here, Bears and Lions, 2 more bad defenses going at it?
Well, how about this? I got a 7-point teaser, guys. Let's do a 7-point teaser here, including that game. First off, I'm going to take the Denver-Tennessee game. I'm using Tennessee again. I'm going to take the Denver-Tennessee game from 39 up to 46. I'm going to go under 46. And you mentioned, Ben, that Detroit-Chicago game. I'm going to go from 48.5 down to 41.5, and I'm taking the over there. Look, Tennessee's defense, like I said, bent but didn't break on Sunday night versus Kansas City. They have allowed 20 points or less, Tennessee, in 5 straight games. Denver is 30th in the league in scoring. Yet on defense, that has kept them around in games, and they're 2nd in points against this season. And in their last three meetings between Denver and Tennessee, the final scores have been 13-10, 16-0, and 16-14. And now on the over in the Bears-Detroit game, yeah, Justin Fields, I think he's better. I think he's better right now than Lamar Jackson is at running the ball. I said last week his legs will keep drives alive for them. Chicago, the last 3 weeks, have scored 33, 29, 32. Detroit is averaging actually 24 points a game, and they're last in the NFL in points allowed. So I'm going to go Denver, Tennessee, under 46. Detroit, Chicago, over 41.5, 7-point teaser.
Love it. Yeah, I mean, I can't disagree. I mean, who do you like in the game? Like, who do you like, Chicago, Detroit? I mean, would you lay the 3 with Chicago, or would you take Detroit in the 3?
I think I would lay the 3 with Chicago right now because, listen, Detroit played a great game against Green Bay. Nice interceptions against Aaron Rodgers. Didn't allow anything really on the ground. I like what Detroit did last week, but I just don't see them putting up that type of effort after getting this win again in Chicago, because this offense for Chicago all of a sudden is something else with Justin Fields. I mean, he's putting up the numbers, and just once he has these design runs and he makes a move and he gets 5 yards downfield, in a heartbeat, we saw that against Miami, in a heartbeat, he can go for 50 and change the dynamic of the game. He could flip a switch because of his legs. I'm taking Chicago.
We both agree with you on that, Harry. I know the other spot you're looking at from a side perspective this week, you went against Kansas City a week ago, laying that ginormous number up to 2 touchdowns against Tennessee. Smaller number this week, but still over a touchdown, -9.5, basically market wide against Jacksonville. Have the Jags shown you enough with finally putting it all together for 60 minutes against the Raiders last week to warrant a bet on in this particular spot in Arrowhead?
I do. I do like the Jaguars. I would buy it. I'd buy it up to 10. But you wouldn't think it, but the Jags' defense is pretty good, and it's keeping them in games, guys. From week 11 to the end of the season last year, the Jags lost by 14 points or more 5 times. This season, in their 6 losses, they have yet to lose by double digits. I feel confident that the Titans did what the Titans did last week in being able to run the ball. Travis Etienne, has three straight 100-yard rushing games, and Jacksonville is 2-1 straight up versus the AFC West this year, and probably should have beaten Denver in London. For whatever reason this year, the Chiefs are a better team on the road than in Arrowhead. At home, KC is 0-4 against the spread this season and are 0-2 this season against the spread versus the AFC South. As long as Trevor Lawrence can hold on the ball, considering he does have 5 fumbles lost this season, I think 10 points, if you get grab 10, I think that's too many here. I'm taking Jacksonville with the points.
You know, I mean, I would be with you there too, because, Peterson is always someone that's hard to trust, especially with his game plans. Last week, he basically decided to let the quarterback participate, but run the ball, and he did a great job with that. And that's the offense they have to run, and they can pressure. I mean, look, they kicked the Raiders' butt up front. I mean, they made no bones about it. They took it to the woodshed, and this Chief offensive line got beat up last week by 4 rushers of Tennessee. Tennessee really gave them a ton of trouble.
Going in, I mean, they had been a pretty solid rush defense team, and I'm sure as you watched that, Harry, you were satisfied to see the way Derrick Henry and the offense kind of blasted him away. And I know you're not someone who normally buys up points, but this was that spot where you did feel like at least getting a little more insurance, getting it up to the flat 10 there would be more advantageous, at least to you, than the 9.5.
Yeah, I just do. I just want to make sure it's 10. You know, you guys always, we all know how games can end crazy like that and with situations in terms of, something happens late. I want to get 10. I want a solid number here when it comes to the spread.
There we go. All right. We've actually done a good job this week, Harry, of giving you some time to explain your money line parlay instead of having to jam it in the final minute.
All
so
right,
please explain. We're getting back on the horse this week, Harry. I can feel it.
Hey, listen, I know when the music starts, I know it'll roll it. I know it's
a
roll.
You're a pro.
Listen, here we go. Another three team money line parlay. Going to play plus 164, guys. I'm going to take the Falcons on Thursday night, minus 160, against Carolina. The Panthers, 31st in the league in offense and on defense. They are 28th versus the run in Atlanta, who's 4th in the league, rushing with 163 yards a game. Running back by committee here, they have, you know, the Falcons have 4 rushers on the team, including Marcus Mariota. 4 rushers who have 299 yards or more. Give me the Falcons on Thursday night. They get it done against Carolina. The Raiders, minus 265 versus the Colts. Both teams are in disarray, but at least Las Vegas has Devontae Adams. I think he's going to be the difference here. And let's close it out on Monday night. Eagles, minus 550 versus Washington. Philly handled Washington quite easily on the road earlier this season. Washington isn't going to be able to stop Hurts. They're not going to be able to stop the entire offense of the Eagles. I'm taking Eagles, Raiders, Falcons, pays plus 164, all on the money line.
You know, I mean, when I watched the Minnesota game, how Minnesota really dominated the game up front. Mm-hmm. I mean, they couldn't block Minnesota. I don't know how they're going to block Philadelphia. I think Washington's offensive line, especially when it goes on the road, is going to have a hard time.
Yeah, that Atlanta Carolina game, that will probably be your sweat there, Harry, because it's hard to. I know Carolina's been awful, and they are starting PJ Walker again. Mike, we'll have Michael's full thoughts on the other side of the Thursday night game, but I mean, Atlanta, just, I had them last week, Harry, and it was like pulling teeth, man, just trying to put things together after they had the first, that original 10-0 lead.
If you look at all, I know, but you're right, exactly, but if you look at all of pretty much the whole season for the Falcons, you're right, Ben, it's a sweat every week. I mean, every week it's down to the wire. I mean, we discussed 2 weeks ago what happened in, the Panthers game where there was 37-34 craziness at the end. And last week also against the Chargers, they lose by 3 when they could have won that game. But I think on the road here in the division, Panthers don't have it. Atlanta gets it.
I just love that both Harry and I, we had that Falcon money line play 2 weeks ago. Sweat of our lives. And Harry's going back to the well. No hesitation whatsoever. Harry at AAO Harry. You can find Harry there. Appreciate the H-Dog for giving us some time. We'll get Michael's thoughts on Thursday Night Football when we return.
You're listening to The Lombardi Line on VSiN, featuring former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now, once again, here's Patrick Maher.
BetMGM, the king of sportsbooks, unleashes the spirit of Las Vegas with BetMGM Rewards. Every time you make a wager at BetMGM, you can earn BetMGM Rewards points you can redeem for online bonus credits like free bets It's never been easier to join the action on the new BetMGM app, featuring a fresh redesign with improved features and quicker navigation. Planning a trip to Vegas? You can also convert your BetMGM points into MGM rewards points you can use towards dining, shows, and hotel rooms at over 20 MGM resorts located on the Las Vegas Strip and nationwide. BetMGM Rewards is sports betting's premier loyalty program, including exclusive offers, incredible experiences, and valuable perks when you wager with BetMGM. Sign up with BetMGM or log in today to take advantage of BetMGM Rewards. Eligibility restrictions apply. Visit BetMGM.com for terms and conditions. Must be 21 years of age or older to wager. Please gamble responsibly. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Big thanks, as always, to Harry Gagnon for joining the show. Just to make sure everybody is aware, his one play, we flash it up on the screen, it's two separate plays, but that is a 7-point, two-team totals teaser there. So again, Harry, he's got the over 41.5 in Bears and Lions, and he's taking under 46 in the Broncos game against the Titans. Just wanted to clarify there. And the stat we were talking about earlier, Michael, we made sure we looked it up, had the actual numbers behind it for our hour number two pro tip. Looking to back these home teams heading into the bye week, they're 7-1 ATS and straight up the season, Michael. Those eight home teams with their bye week the following week. So as you mentioned, the numbers do support everything you were saying earlier.
Yeah, it's just, to me, it's a mentality. You know, it's kind of like an encouragement. It's a dangling the carrot in front of the team. Hey, if we play good, you're going to get all these days off. Let's give it everything we got. Let's worry, you know. And they do. And even though the Patriots, the Patriots played horribly offensively. You know, they averaged 3.3 yards per play. They turned it over one time, but they were just a little bit better than the Colts, who got a punt blocked and didn't make any plays. So I think it's something to look at. And the team that kind of qualifies in that area is Miami. I mean, look, you know, there's a lot of things going for Miami well, and they're moving the ball really effectively offensively, and they're playing against a Cleveland team, and they know the quarterback in Brissett. I mean, so, you know, they know what bothers Brissett. The organization has seen Brissett. He was on the team last year. So Josh Boyer, the defense coordinator, should know how to attack him. It sets up well for them as they go into their bye. Obviously, the 3.5 isn't as attractive if it gets down to 3,
right,
but I still think it's a good play.
Yeah, 3.5 or 4, depending on the market. That is, as Michael said, the one team that qualifies this week, Miami at home against Cleveland. As far as tomorrow, Thursday Night Football, it's a game we will have just seen only 10 days in between the two meetings, Panthers and Falcons. We've seen some money come back to the Carolina side. It was Falcons minus 3.
Yeah.
Some of those threes now juiced to the Carolina side. A couple books have gone down to 2.5. What's different when you look at two teams who just played each other within a 10-day span that might be unique, Michael, from, say, playing in week 2 and then week 9 in the division?
Well, I think what happens is you go back and watch the tape and you say, okay, here's what we did. Here's how they adjusted. Here's what we adjusted. Now where do we go? The difference in this game is going to be Cordell Patterson wasn't in the last game, okay? And so and the Panthers struggled to stop the run in that game. And so they've got to do a better job of that. Now, is A.J. Terrell going to play? Is what's the secondary like for Atlanta? Because when they played them 10 days ago, it wasn't very good. And Carolina threw the football. I mean, Carolina, I think if you're sitting there saying, I'm going to take Atlanta because Carolina was bad last week, then you forgot how bad Atlanta was when they played Cincinnati.
Yeah.
Right? So you almost have to throw that game out. And it's a home game. And, you know, Carolina fired two more coaches after the game. One of the guys was Matt Rhule's recruiting coordinator going back to Baylor, who was the secondary coach, and Paul Pasqualoni, the former Syracuse coach, who was coaching the D-line, which I happen to think were playing pretty good. So they're trying to fix it. Like, Carolina's not giving up on the season. And I think ultimately, you know, this is their season. They've got to find a way to beat Atlanta or else they're in deep trouble. They already are in deep trouble because I don't think they're a playoff team. But the reality of it is this is a game that they should be able to win. I mean, I'm surprised they went pack with P.J. Walker right away. I thought for sure they would go with Baker Mayfield, but I think they really feel like P.J. gives them a chance to throw it down the field.
I guess you would have to think that the coaching staff right now, the interim Steve Wilks in Carolina for a 2-7 team, if you're going with P.J. Walker this week after he went 3-10 for 9 yards and 2 interceptions, are you thinking that the only rationale is, well, let's just throw out the Bengal game, bad matchup against the 7th-ranked pass D, and let's just kind of hope that the exact same thing we just saw in the previous game with over 300 passing yards, over 6.5 yards of play, over 400 yards of offense, that manifests again? Because I can't think of another reason where you would give Walker another start here, Michael.
Well, I mean, he played really good in that game. You know, he played good in the game against the team we're getting ready to play, and he game planned against them. And when you don't have any practice, like you didn't have any practice this week, those practice reps that he got the week before are going to serve him well, mental reps. You're not having a lot of physical reps, but you're going to get some mental reps this week. So I think that's probably the thinking, whereas Baker didn't take those physical reps.
Totally makes sense. It's just it's hard to look at a guy, no matter what you want to qualify the previous week at, when you do so little, down 35-0 at the half, a game where Carolina was uncompetitive.
It wasn't all just him, though. I mean, that game was over at 14-0. It was bad from the start, you know, and the defense has to assume a lot. They couldn't get off the field. I mean, they couldn't stop a team that can't run the ball from running the ball. That's what scares you. That's what makes Harry's position so strong, is like, okay, they're going to come in with Cordell Patterson, and this team can't stop a running game.
Carolina on the season, they fall now to 17th on the run on an overall EPA per play allowed basis, 6th in the run stop win rate leaderboard at ESPN. And you wonder how much of a difference to the line does Cordero Patterson makes now, Michael, where we all always talk about quarterback impact to the line. How much does that move the needle for you when you're looking at this line where it would be with versus without Patterson?
Well, he's just a different back. I mean, he's a home run back. I mean, you know, they got called back for a holding penalty, if you remember, off that left tackle. He ran that zone play, and he took it down the sideline. And, I mean, he can just run through people. I mean, he is – and then he can impact the passing game, too. So he's so multidimensional. He could do so many different things, and he's so powerful, and he's so hard to tackle. I mean, I think that's really what we're talking about. And so that becomes a real issue.
If you just think, though, about this, the whole Falcons stretch here coming up, where – you are still, at this moment, tied with Tampa, top the division at 4-5. You're second on the odds board right now if you're Atlanta to win the division. And you have some very winnable games coming up where you host Chicago in your next week, and that'll have the extra rest coming off Thursday Night Football. Look, Commanders, Steelers, Saints will be the games after that. You have a game against the Cardinals still coming up. We've seen just the Jekyll and Hyde nature of the Falcons. If you're trying to figure out what side either to the good or the bad you sit on with Atlanta, where is it right now at 4-5?
Well, I mean, I sit on the good side of Atlanta because they found ways to win games, and Carolina hasn't been able to find ways. Early in the season, Carolina was in games other than the San Francisco game, and they couldn't find a way to win it. And I think you got to go with that. I think that Arthur Smith has done a really good job of getting his team ready and taking this six-back approach and utilizing it to his full advantage. I mean, Mariota doesn't, you know, he doesn't throw the ball very much. They don't want to throw it. You know, they're going to pick their times to throw it. And ultimately, they want to run the football and keep their defense off the field. I mean, he's trying to help his defense as much as possible.
Right. Well, and if you look at it, too, if you're trying to make an in-season, let's look at either win total bets or division where the Falcons are, they're still second choice behind Tampa Bay, plus money to come out of the NFC South. You have to look at I would think, Michael, if you're handicapping this rest of the season, who are they facing rush defense-wise? We know, if you look at the schedule here, Commanders have a very good rush defense. Cardinals do have a good rush defense. Outside of that, though, I mean, who else? And we know the Saints have been number one. They just took a step back last week. So if you look at this and the remaining schedule, I mean, you have Panthers below average, at least on the season, Bears way below average, Steelers below average. That same deal with the Ravens and the Buccaneers, as weird as that is to say. So that's five games of your final eight where you ought to at least have that edge based on what you want to do and kind of that six-back type offense that you've talked about so often with Atlanta.
Yeah, and I mean, it's hard to defend too, right? It's not an easy offense to defend because you got to take account the quarterback, and they've got backs who can break tackles. And they're very good at doing it. They have an identity. They know exactly who they are. And I think part of that is what makes you successful, is know who you are. And Arthur, even when he got behind in Cincinnati, didn't change who he was. He was still going to run the ball. You know, they're just not – neither team – Carolina should be better on defense than they are. For them not to put any pressure on Joe Burrow was disappointing to me.
And we point that out, at least for the win total perspective, because it's still – I mean, it was 4.5 when it first opened preseason. But if you wanted to get involved – 7.5. Do you believe, can the Falcons basically split? Can they go 4-4 rest of the season? Tomorrow night has a big indicator of where they will go there. But it's kind of the general point, Michael. There's so many ways to bet now in season with futures in general. And you can look at a shorter runway now that we have 8 games left. What are strengths? What are weaknesses here? I still have a hard time trusting Atlanta tomorrow. I've been on them two of the last 3 weeks, and it's just been like a mental nightmare trying to get through those games. So I'm going to be staying away. I don't mind teasing Carolina up, though, especially given, as you said, you would think the defensive improvements would be there backs against the wall at 2-7. But I'm not. I can't go on Harry's side. I can't lay with Atlanta with the way they've looked. I just can't do it.
I don't blame you. I mean, either I'm taking Chicago, but I'm not taking Detroit. I can tell you that. Like, that's my nemesis right there.
All right. Great hanging with you as always, Michael. We'll see
Thanks,
you.
Ben.
You're back on the show
Thanks,
tomorrow.
Matt Santos.
Yep. Matt Santos, our producer. Andrew Ingold, our technical director. Mikhail, Sean, Sergio, Troy, everybody. We have VEASAN Big Bets with Dave Ross and Amal Shah coming your way next.